Hello, sons, and hello, brothers. I'm Kyle, and I'm here with my brothers Chuck, Dan, and Wes. And it is Masters weekend for any of you who are golf fans. And so I wanted to start this podcast episode out with a little question for the boys. Guys, what first of all, do you watch the Masters? And second, what is a golfing memory you have? Who wants to go first?
I can go first. I do not watch the Masters. This is Chuck. I do respect, like, the idea of golf. I don't know. I like the idea of golf. I'll just say that. Leave it there. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily watch the Masters, but I do keep tabs on who's winning. Okay. I do like Scottie Scheffler. Hope he wins.
Yeah.
I don't even know what's going on yet. I'll check in, you know, after the weekend and see what's going on. So golf memory. We talked about this before. I remember Dad, his idea was that, golfing Saturday is too precious of a day to get angry about. And so this one time a guy in the church had given him a bag, like a paper bag full of golf balls. And we were out golfing, and he was having a particularly terrible day. He could hit the ball like a billion yards, but, you know, half of that was a hook or a slice. And one day it was just really bad, and he was there was one hole where he hit the ball, and it just went way out into the woods. And I remember him grabbing that paper bag full of golf balls, and there's probably 100 golf balls. And he dumped them out on the ground. And one after the next, he launched those babies.
He used the seventh tee as a driving range.
Yeah. It was like he was doing that so he wouldn't get upset. Like, I remember him laughing about it, but he hit every one of those balls in the woods. Every single one.
Oh, that's
awesome. My, one of my favorite golf memories. I don't golf anymore.
One and only golf memories with Dad. When I was a kid, Dad was like hung up the clubs. But I remember one time in Fremont, he took me. He let me go with you guys and somebody else. I can't remember who it was, but he let me get like a chipper and he would throw me a ball in the sand and let me chip onto the green and then putt it. But I remember he always would tell me it's just too much of a time consumption for me to go play a couple, like a 9 or 18 holes. He was like, I need to spend it with you guys. So, but that was probably one of my memories is just watching Dad play. And then at the greens, I would get the chip on or something like that. Probably why I'm so good with my irons to this day.
Dan's the only one of us who golfs anymore.
Yeah.
You're going golfing today, Dan.
Yes. I got a tee time at 4.
Awesome.
Nice.
Awesome. All right.
Yeah.
Wes, what about you? You like golf?
I'm 29. I've never played a game of golf in my life. But I do. If the Masters is on, I'll turn it on and watch it, but not for very long because I honestly have no idea what's going on or how to even play or who's winning or who's in the lead. So,
yeah, but it's all in negative scores. It's like, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's going around.
Yeah, because isn't golf the lower you score, the better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that always threw me off. But honestly, my memories with golf is this is probably going to make some people upset. But one thing that Dad taught me, and I've done it my entire life, is when I'm driving. And I told Dad about this, but it was a probably a couple of years ago. I was driving past the golf course and a guy kind of got off path and he was like chipping right by the sidewalk, right by the road I was driving down. And he was in the middle of his backswing and I was driving down the road like a few feet behind him. And right as he was in his backswing, I just laid on my horn and it was like, the perfect one. And Dad always loved doing that, so I told him about that.
I may have done that last week in Florida.
I did it last week too, and Cecilia said, "Why would you do something like that?" I'm like, "The guy's trying to hit a golf ball."
I've got bursitis. Oh my goodness. Well, I remember Dad, you're right, guys. Dad did not golf. He golfed less and less as he aged.
Yeah.
And but yeah. I think there was a time in his life earlier on when I was a kid where he was like, you know, I'm a pastor. I gotta visit the greens. So he felt like he needed to golf or something. And I know Uncle Jim, his brother-in-law, Aunt Melanie's husband, Jim loved to golf and may still love to golf, but they lived near each other at that time in life, and they would golf together on Monday mornings on his day off.
Yeah.
And Dad would let me come along. Obviously, he would always take one of us with him everywhere. And I remember so I was just a little kid, and he had the guy in the pro shop saw off an old driver and put a grip on it and made a driver for me, a little tiny driver. And I remember two things about golfing with Dad. First of all, it was super early in the morning every time.
Yeah.
And I remember I loved going, but it was like, man, it's so early. And I remember that my shoes and socks would be soaked because of the dew on the ground.
That's the worst.
And by the time we were done golfing, I would be like, my shoes would sound like I just walked through a river. But those were good times.
I remember those days. I mean, obviously not with Jim, but we would go out when you worked at that golf course for a while. Dad was able to, I think Dad did everything on purpose. So like, he didn't golf just because he thought if I'm golfing, I'm not with the kids. And so when you worked at that golf course for the summer or whatever, Dad used that 1 year to golf a lot with us and used it as a time to hang out with us. But I remember he would always it was sun's up, he's out golfing first thing, so that he could get back and do the responsible stuff. But I just remember being miserable and thinking, you know, you start out and the greens are really, really slow and your ball's spraying water.
Yeah.
And then by the time the day's done, you're just launching the golf ball off the green because it sped up, sun came out.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Good memories. And if you all are watching the Masters this weekend, I hope you enjoy that. It is always kind of like the icon of spring. Spring has arrived in our nation. It's beautiful.
Well, the icon of spring in Georgia.
Yeah, it is in Augusta, at least.
It's the hope of spring for everybody else.
Yep. All right. Well, there you go. There's a little bit about golf, but it's time for Stuff I Want to Say. This is a podcast for men where we share teachings and encouragements and exhortations to men from our dad, Ken Pierpont. It was his heart to help inform, inspire, and motivate men to have a real and vital walk with God. And he passed that down to us, his own sons. And so we have decided to carry on his vision for this podcast as his sons. In this podcast, we'll take one of our dad's writings, or his stories, and we read it. And then we share our own memories and stories and experiences on that topic. And it's always an encouragement to us as sons. And if you are listening in, we hope it is an encouragement to you as well. And in our last episode, we started a mini series on how to be a man of influence in your life. And last week, we had a little hiatus, a 1 week hiatus because of spring break. But the last episode, we talked about going to church and the importance of Sabbath and the importance of going to worship on a weekly basis in a local community, in a church, and making that part of your life. And being a man of influence is something we want to talk about because our dad, Ken Pierpont, was a man the Lord used to influence hundreds of people Godward. The Lord used him to influence us, his sons, powerfully. Dad did this in so many ways. And this podcast really is one of the ways that we keep that influence alive in our hearts, even though our dad has left this world and he is in eternity with the Lord. But today we want to talk about a powerful way to influence those in your life Godward. And this is something that dad would call holy pilgrimage. So one way to be a man of influence in your life is to embrace this idea of holy pilgrimage. And to give you an idea of what that is, I want to read something our dad wrote on this idea. And he wrote this late in October on a Saturday morning in 2022. And so let me read this one's a little bit longer, but it'll be a good example of what was in his heart when he thought of a holy pilgrimage. And here it is. Some of the Psalms are Psalms of Ascent. They are songs for the road when you are on a holy pilgrimage. It is especially helpful to think of Psalm 133 that way. At least twice a year, the fathers and sons would make their way from wherever they lived to the temple in Jerusalem. And you can read about that in Deuteronomy 16. This is a song for brothers together on the road. Can you hear the deep men's voices as they sing and stride up toward the holy city? Can you imagine the hearts of the sons and fathers knit together in the Lord as the sons observe their father's enthusiasm and devotion to the things of the Lord? There would have been a sacrifice of time and money to make a pilgrimage like that. That would become a cherished tradition. When I think of it, I am reminded of the fervor approaching religious devotion with which some men approach outdoor sports or tailgating. Is the devotion to sports so common in our culture sometimes a misplaced way of expressing the eternal urges and impulses written by God on the heart of every man? Maybe a holy pilgrimage is one of the ways that God designed to fulfill the heart of a man. There are certainly elements of religious fervor evident in football fans. I have listed some of them from my own experience and observation. We are inspired by the devotion and exertion of others. We are stirred by rousing music. We are thrilled by the thousands of others expressing themselves all together without reservation. We are united against a common enemy. We delight in the fellowship of a common loyalty. We venerate those who are valiant in the cause with a veneration akin to worship. We have regular times of devotion. We have times of feasting, tailgating, and times of fasting, wrestlers making weight. We have days that are set aside especially for this religious devotion to sport. We make sacrifices. We wear holy garments that express our loyalty to our deity, and we participate in holy pilgrimages. At least five generations of Pierpont men have been fairly avid fans of the Ohio State University football. Amen, boys?
Yes.
I've been able to observe the near religious devotion of some of the fans. My earliest memories were of working with my dad on a Sabbath, I mean Saturday morning, and listening with rapt attention to the exploits of our team together. I remember the passion my dad had for the team, the antics that made us all laugh, and the routine that took over, especially as the season neared its climax when the fine young men of Ohio were pitted against the evil interlopers from Michigan. One Saturday morning in November of 1987, my oldest son, Kyle, and I became the first of five generations of Pierpont Buckeyes ever to make the pilgrimage to the holy city for worship. And by that, he means Columbus and the horseshoe. When you think about the modern obsession with sports, from hunting to hockey, from football to fishing, and from soccer to cycling, the analogy is almost impossible to miss. I read an article this year in Runner's World in which a secular writer seriously stated that running is a religion to thousands. This was not tongue-in-cheek. We live in an increasingly spiritual culture. We need to be careful to distinguish the spirits. Religious urges beat in the heart of every man, but they can never be fully satisfied without Christ. We are created as spiritual beings, and our spirits long for fulfillment and expression. Our hearts were made to worship him, and we will never find our heart's delight until our hearts delight in devotion to him. The infinitely creative creator has given us all things richly to enjoy, and I believe this includes a variety of sports, including team sports. I do think there are times when sports becomes, like many other things, a God substitute. I find myself praying that God would erase from my children's memory the times when they saw an inordinate delight and passion in me for things that have no eternal significance. Isn't it interesting that lately, large numbers of men, under the inspiration of a football coach, have dressed up like they were going to a sporting event and made their way to stadiums for a huge men's conferences? Why don't you gather your sons and your dad and your brothers and schedule a holy pilgrimage? Don't forget to bring your songbook and plenty of good food. Well, that's something to think about on a beautiful Saturday morning in October. Well, I gotta go. Need to hang out my Buckeye flag. there you go. So that was Dad's piece on holy pilgrimage. And this is something that each of us as his sons have experienced in our life, right, guys?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Dad loved to go to places and to take us, his kids, to places that would encourage us in our love for Jesus. He really wanted to expose us to places and environments and gatherings of people and events that would draw our hearts to the Lord and inspire in us a relationship with God. And I think, you know, there's something powerful about these times in life, guys. I know if, as we've talked about it, we've agreed that these have been powerful times that we've experienced a holy pilgrimage together. We've each experienced it, and I've seen the power of it in the lives of my own family, you know, and my wife, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, but in my boys. And I really do believe that one way to be a man of influence in life, like we talked about last week, guys, it is very important for men to take up the responsibility of leading our families. And, you know, this would be one of the ways we could do that, is to make times for a holy pilgrimage in our life. So we want to take some time to talk about this today, guys. We're going to share some memories and thoughts. But we hope it's an encouragement to you all that are listening to look for times that you can make a holy pilgrimage. These times set aside that, you know, are special with those in your life to pursue God, and to be a beautiful way to inspire those we love is to take part in holy pilgrimage. So, guys, what are your thoughts on this?
I'll start. Because I talk with Dad about this often, and so I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm delusional, but I feel like I had special times of conversation with Dad about this, because I went with him a lot to conferences, and his idea about the Holy Pilgrimage was a special time set apart, set away from the usual, to go to a holy place. And like, to him, he saw that when people would travel to the Horseshoe, or insert your favorite stadium, where you would travel up to a place to join in, you know, worship together with others that was outside of the normal. And so he loved that idea. And his idea was like to pick a camp. And I know he loved many camps, like Bambi Springs, Pleasant Valley Bible Camp, the Springs, Barrichell. We went with him especially a lot to Barrichell, and there were many more that I'm missing. But he would say, you know, you need to set a time, a special time, once a year or twice a year, to go up to a truly holy place, like insert the name of your favorite camp, because I'm going to miss some of them that he loved and spoke about. And so he would say, set a time once a year to go up to these places. And his idea was to get out of the mundane. And the mundane meaning, you know, we have corporate worship at church. That's where you gather with the church, and that's one thing, and that's good, and it's necessary. And then we have things like small groups, which is kind of corporate, but in a smaller setting. Then you had individual times of worship, and that's in the devotions. And I know people express this, like the row, the circle, the chair. You have these mundane times of worship. But this idea was to break out of the mundane and to have like this holy immigration, this holy pilgrimage up to a holy place, to break you out of the normal and to give you these holy experiences with other people who are being made holy. To him, he really wanted to make that a special time for us when we went to camp. So he would always tell me, like, I won't buy, he goes, I'll get you a good baseball glove, but I'll buy you a great Bible, because he goes, this is what you really, really need. And so when we would go to camps and stuff, he would work so hard to make it special. I remember one time he was playing Christian music and we had just left camp and we were traveling home, and he wanted to have a worshipful moment. It was late at night. He had dropped his Fernando Ortega CDs, and he bent down to pick them up to try to play them. And then all of a sudden cop lights come from out of nowhere. They go to the window and they say, are you drunk? Said, you're over the line. They were kind of wondering, you know, what's going on. And Dad's like, oh no, just trying to play my Christian music on the way home from camp. to Dad, it wasn't anything special where you like had to do weird rituals or anything. It was just make it a really special time. Make your kids love it. Buy them nice things. Make it a special event to go up to this holy place, yep, and to worship with other people who are being sanctified. And that was the big idea behind the Holy Pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, like, seeing how purposeful Dad was in this and making sure we knew how important it was to him and trying to get us on the same path or be a good, you know, influence on us was just amazing. And I hope I can be that someday, because I'm not. But everything he did, so like going, I'm going to go off of Barakel too, because we spent almost every summer of my life. It was like, when are we going to Barakel? It was like, you know, going up through the outlet malls, Dad talked about having holy garments, like our Buckeyes jersey or something like that. Dad would swing by the Tiger Run outlets and let us pick out. And this was a big deal to Dad. Like, I know we didn't have a ton of money growing up, and he would let us get a shirt or some shorts or some boots or some tennis shoes. And he just spent a lot of time making it our heart was happy, like our heart was in a good spot and open to, you know, things of the Lord the whole time up there. If we ever, like, we would always joke around, fool around, horse off, as he would call it.
horsing around.
And he would always be like wanting us to get focused in on, you know, talking about things of the Lord, talking about where we're at in life, walk with Jesus. And even crossing the holy waters of the Osabo River, he'd be like,
there we go.
Yes, he sir. He would pause, and then one time I was like, why do we do that, Dad? And he was like, well, it's just kind of a thing we do. Of course, those waters aren't, you know, holy, but
it's, and he had to give you the theology on it.
Yeah, and he was like, let's just, you know, and then he would talk about, you know, that kind of stuff. And those, I just remember everything was like getting your heart right on the way up there, worshiping God and getting your heart right so you could, you know, listen for the voice of the Lord or be more open to it. Everything he did was, even like a trip to Campton, Kentucky, he would try to turn that into a, he would practice the songs we're going to sing in the street, and he would make sure everybody, you know, had the clothes and we all were excited about it. So, but those are some of my memories.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think about Barakel too, because it was such a staple in our lives growing up. Going up there was always so much fun. And it was, I think one of the reasons it was made, it was always such a good time, is just because of the little things that he did that I didn't even think of at the time. Like, for some reason, like, he made crossing the Zilwaukee Bridge like this big.
You're right.
Like, he would call people. I'm so glad you mentioned that. He would call people and be like, well, I just want to let you know we're crossing the Zilwaukee Bridge. Yeah. And everybody was always like, cool. But He made that a big deal. And then number 1 year, it was early on when me and Daniel first started going out to Barrack Hill, and Kyle and Chuck were with us, and Dad was talking to me and Daniel, and he was like, oh, we're going to – when we get about 15 minutes out of from camp, we're going to stop at Mac's Coffee Shop. And so me and Daniel were like, oh, what is that? And he was like, you'll just have to see it. It's this great coffee shop, and it's just – it's amazing. Isn't it right? Isn't that right, Kyle and Chuck? And Kyle and Chuck were like, oh, my goodness, wait till you see this place. And so we drove and drove.
And then you would talk about the pictures on the wall. Yes.
So we were getting all excited, and then we get about 15 minutes out, and he pulls into McDonald's, and he was like, well, here we are. This is Mac's Coffee Shop. And we went inside, and he was right, because up in Mayo, there's in that McDonald's, there's a picture of a dude fly fishing on the wall. And, but like it wasn't disappointing, but it made such a big memory, and I've never called that McDonald's anything but Mac's Coffee Shop ever since. but you're right, he did all these things to get us hyped up and excited and ready to go and worship God. And even in the there's so many memories I have of just being there with Dad and with you guys, just getting hot cocoa from the cafeteria and making that walk back from the cafeteria to the trading post.
yes.
But dude. Yeah, I just love that. And then I was going to go on a father-son trip with Dad a few years ago. I bought my plane ticket, and it got canceled because of COVID. So now I spend a lot of time thinking about how cool that would have been to do one last father-son trip with him.
But, oh, my goodness. Man, yeah. I think we need to all schedule a holy pilgrimage, boys.
Yeah.
Go to a father-son retreat or a men's retreat or something together.
I'm totally down for that. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Do you – I want to back up a little bit, Wes. I love the Mac's Coffee Shop stop. And then tell me what would happen after that, because I know something happened. You got in the car and you started driving toward Fairview. You got through Fairview and you got to the entrance of Camp Barrack Hill. What would you do?
Yeah, we would stop at the sign every single time, and we would sing Camp Barrack Hill, which is the camp song.
Yes. And, should we sing it, guys? Should we sing it
for him?
Yeah, let's sing it.
Maybe not. I'll sing the first line. Camp Barrack Hill, Camp Barrack Hill.
We're glad to turn again
to this blessed place where truth and grace
from God's
own word abound. Our lives are new. We give to you to live and serve our best.
Can't forget.
Oh, man, my bad.
Last line, guys, is important. Last line. For sure,
God
has blessed.
And then we would hold it out as long as we could.
Oh, yeah. You're right, dude. We would hold it up, and we would try to hold it out to the cabin, the welcome cabin.
Yes. As we're driving, and he would drive slower.
I'm disappointed I messed it up, boys. I apologize. I always do that when it comes to singing stuff, just like
hey,
I
do. Hey, Uncle Johnny. Back
for a refresher.
That's right. We need to go back for a refresher, and I'm sure Uncle Johnny will forgive you.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for somebody to actually say, we're just joking, we're not going to sing that.
Well, I kind of thought you guys wouldn't go with it, but we just kind of did it.
Kind of just happened.
We can't take it back.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like falling down a muddy hill.
But I mean, you know, it's kind of funny, but it's also like it shows too, like that song does, it is somewhat a psalm of ascent for us. You know?
Yeah, it really is.
It's a holy song to us. And, you know, I love the part at the very end there that says, for surely God has blessed. That's what Barrack Hill means, is God has blessed. And, you know, like Chuck, you pointed out, there's a lot of great camps in Michigan and in our world. Barrack Hill is one that, you know, God chose just to use in a powerful way in our own lives. And that's part of what my memories are is, you know, Barrichello is where I met my wife. And the cool story about that is, well, one of them was Dad would always say he picked her. He found her while he was speaking one week. She was a counselor, you know, and he was speaking to her and to all the other counselors and their tribes. And he did. He wrote her name down on a legal pad of paper, and she stood out to him, you know. And he told me that often, and it was just really a cool thing. And the cool story behind that involves this idea of holy pilgrimage in a way, because you know, Elizabeth, through high school, she was a good girl and whatnot, but she, you know, her heart wasn't fully dedicated to the Lord during her high school years. And so later in high school, I think it was her senior year even, I mean, she would go to Barrichello with her dad. And so Bruce Winsler would take Elizabeth, you know, his high school age daughter, on these father-daughter retreats to Barrichello. And it was a holy pilgrimage, you know, it was a place that they loved together. And Elizabeth describes Barrichello being a place where she put her faith in Christ and rededicated her life late in her high school years to walk with God closely and to, you know, fall under the care of the Lord in her life and to walk with him. And so Barrichello is a special place to me for that reason. Like, this idea of holy pilgrimage, you know, made its way into Bruce Winsler's heart, and he would take his sons there for father-son retreats and Elizabeth there for father-daughter, you know, which made Elizabeth want to go back and counsel in her college, during her college years. And that's when we met. So, really did use that place as a special place for our family and in my life. And, you know, I have those memories. I remember even, earlier in life, we would go to Knoxville, Tennessee for several years every summer. There was a big conference down there, kind of a homeschooling conference. And, you know, it was definitely a holy pilgrimage south. And we would load up the van and get all of our, you know, our clothes ready and pack them up. And it did take sacrifice. Mom and Dad didn't make much money then, especially. And they would sacrifice a lot to, you know, pay for the gas to go down there, a hotel to stay in, and food. And, we just love those times. And I never forget, you know, like, you know, the scripture says that the people of Israel would sing psalms of ascent. The men and the sons would sing these songs as they walked up toward Jerusalem. And even it says that they would read these or sing these songs as they walked up the temple steps, you know. And I remember going to Knoxville, and it was in the Thompson Bowling Arena. The conference was huge. It was thousands of people. It would fill the arena. And then one of the first things we would do is we would all gather in that arena and sing hymns. And I just remember multiple times, as you guys probably do too, looking at Dad and he would just be weeping, you know. And those times of worship were so powerful, and just those that made a difference in our lives, you know, making those pilgrimages to Knoxville or to Barrichello. And Chuck, you remember last year, almost a year ago, going to a Basics conference?
I do.
That was a special time. More special than we knew at the time, because Dad bought his tickets to that conference this year as well. But I remember, you know, Chuck, I came over and picked you up in Williamston, and then we went down to Dad's place in Jackson, put our stuff in his 4Runner and drove to Ohio. And I know you feel this way too, because we've talked about it, but the trip to Ohio went so quickly from Jackson to Ohio, and we left the driveway and started just, you know, sharing stories about what God was doing in our life and neat things that were happening in our ministries. And we just pinballed between the three of us. You know, I would say something, you would say something, Dad would say something. back and forth. And I remember a couple times Dad kind of like doing what he would do, and he would like stop everything. Like, guys, wait, 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 wait. This is exactly what I was hoping for, men. That we would a time of rich fellowship. I just love you guys. I'm so thankful we have this. You know, this is, we could, what did he say, Chuck? You were like, we could turn around and go home right now. Uh-oh, we just lost Chuck. Hopefully he comes back in. But I remember Dad saying that, like, we could turn the car around and go right home right now, and it would be worth the price of the ticket.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. He loved that.
He did. I could hear him saying that, too. It was like, oh, man, I could turn around right now, and I'd be just as happy. This is what I came for.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's that all he wanted so was good, godly conversation.
Yes. Yep. Good conversation, uplifting, you know, really, I think, times of worship and, you know, preparing our hearts for worship as we would go to these, you know, these places. And so, guys, anything else to add on that? I know we lost Chuck. Hopefully we get Chuck back in here, but anything else to add on Holy Pilgrimage?
Yeah, no, that's about it. Nope.
I would just say to anybody listening too, like, just realize, like, you can make this stuff happen with, you don't got to do anything crazy. You don't have to go to crazy places. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be extravagant and expensive. Like, Dad just made anything we were doing special in this way. And, you're right. So
you're right.
It's not anything outlandish that we were doing. Yeah. It was just very simple stuff, just making it positive and exciting.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
That's kind of what I was going to say is I'm about to go take a satanic pilgrimage to the soccer fields and let kids go crazy for a second.
Yeah, if you can make a toddler soccer game a holy pilgrimage, then you're better than I am.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys don't need me to say it, but Dad would figure out a way. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly what I'm thinking of. Is like, how can I make this a redemptive time? How do we redeem this time?
Yeah.
So
yeah. I'm back, boys. Can you hear me?
Hey, we got you back, Chuck. I knew you.
Talk about redemption. I'm here to give you my web redemption. I just got kicked off by accident. I don't know what happened.
I was hoping you'd find your way back in. I was just asking the guys.
I'm going to the soccer field. No, I just think that the idea is, in terms of man taking the time and the responsibility of this, it's super important because we do our, like, I'm drywalling my dining room, and that's all my two boys talk about. Gunnison walks in from school every day. Dad, you're doing a good job on the drywall. I'm doing a terrible job. Route points to the walls and says, Dad did it. Dad did it. And so you've got these children that are looking at you. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Dad was always so disappointed in, and I've said it before, was people that made a Christ figure out of sports teams and never made a Christ figure out of Christ.
Yeah.
Something to be venerated, something to be worshipped, something to be wowed by, something to be, to give your life to, dedicate time to.
Yeah.
And he loves sports and he loves everything that everybody else does. He wasn't a kook, but he loved Christ more than anything. And he made sure that us kids saw that of all that he loved and all of his failures, he loved Christ. And so this is a big thing for guys to take responsibility for. And with that, I'll quit because I've got to go to the soccer field with my boy.
Amen. Well, guys, I think that's great. And thanks for doing this again. I know we all look forward to it. And it's been a neat way for us to encourage one another. And we hope those of you listening are encouraged. And we are encouraged when we hear from you. So thanks for your notes. Many of you, you know, hit us up on Instagram or comment on the podcast and let us know that it's helpful. So we're very grateful for that, and know that it is helpful to us as well as we produce it and remember these truths that our dad that our dad believed in with all of his heart. And so there it is, a way to be a man of influence, holy pilgrimage. So I would say a takeaway would be there are hundreds of solid Bible teaching camps in our nation. And find one and schedule a father-son retreat or a men's retreat or father-daughter retreat or a couples retreat. And make time in your life for a holy pilgrimage, because these are powerful ways to have a vital walk with God.